Hi, this is Blake Smith, the host of Monster Talk. We're still officially on hiatus, but this is a brief special episode with Ben Radford talking about a project he's working on called Undead Apocalypse, a board game.
It's actually quite unlike anything we've ever seen before.
A giant, hairy creature, part ape, part man.
In Loch Ness, a 24-mile-long bottomless lake in the highlands of Scotland, it's a creature known as the Loch Ness Monster.
Monster Talk.
Hey there, Blake.
Hey, let me get the cobwebs off my microphone.
I hear you, man. It feels a little weird to be back in the saddle again.
Yeah. So this is a special edition of Monster Talk. I'm still on my self-imposed hiatus for work stuff. Not to turn this into a commercial, but if you were to go buy something at www.officezilla.com, it would certainly help me. We're actually getting some great sales. We picked up some new accounts, and I'm actually really happy with our progress. But it would help if people bought some stuff. It's great. So that being said, Ben, what have you been up to? I got this link with this Undead Apocalypse thing. What is this?
What is this wacky stuff?
That's a project that's been eating up my soul and nights and weekends for the past few months. It's basically a follow-up to my board game, which you and many other people know about. In fact, I know you know about it because you were there at the beginning. You and me were there with my first board game, Playing Gods at Dragon Con, and a table and everything.
That's true. So now you say it's a follow-up, so it's not a sequel.
No, not a sequel. I mean, you know, Playing Gods, you know, if, for those who don't know, it was subtitled The Board Game of Divine Domination, and it was basically a satire of religious warfare. And as you can imagine, this was not going to be sold at Walmart anytime soon, nor anywhere else where anyone might potentially get offended. I actually spent about 9 months trying to get into Spencer Gifts and finally got shot down. But no, this one has nothing to do with religion or satire per se. This one is it has some sort of similar themes. It's basically about zombies and werewolves and vampires and post-apocalyptic humans. And it has a sort of a similar theme. It's for 2 to 4 players all, you know, battling it out for control of what's left of the earth.
What year is this set in?
2060 was apparently it was. We're trying to pick a time. You know, 2050 seems a little cliched. So for some reason, we thought that another 10 years wouldn't be cliched. So.
First of all, let me just say that I like the website and the sculpt model. The pictures I've seen for what you're going to be doing with the artwork is beautiful.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, that was one of the things that I was really wanting to do because, with that was one of the real selling points for Playing Gods was we had these awesome miniatures. I mean, these really, you know, the Buddha with the chain gun, the badass Buddha of Enforced Enlightenment, as we call him, everybody loves a Buddha with a chain gun. I mean, how can you not love that? I even had Buddhists come up to me and say, "Dude, that's really cool."
The Playing Gods artwork was fantastic, and the miniatures. I mean, the game itself was a lot of fun too. I don't want to knock the game; it was great. Sure. And people can still buy that game.
Yeah, the game's still out. You can get it on Amazon.com. You can get it at some independent game stores here and there. You can get it through me. You can contact me through BenjaminRadford.com. I'm around, but yeah, there's still a few of those left. And to be honest, I wasn't really that excited about sort of jumping back into the board game business. That wasn't sort of my lifelong dream or anything. But you know, I sort of was kicking around the idea for it, and we can talk a little bit more of that later if you want. But I just said, hey, you know, why not sort of explore something different and sort of go in a monster-y direction. And so that's what we did with it. And I actually had the same sculptor who did the figurines for Playing Gods also created these miniatures for Undead Apocalypse, and they're just these awesome And these things are the size, they're 52 millimeters high, so they're basically the size of a wooden matchstick. And they're just incredibly detailed, and they're just so awesome. And I've had some people like, oh my God, I want those. So those are, that'll be a nice bonus.
Yeah. So we'll put links to the show notes for your previous game and the Undead board game. And so I see you've got a website for the Undead board game. And how does that tie into Kickstarter? Or how, are these two separate links? How does that work?
Yeah, that's actually a good question. It's a little, not confusing, but it's for the people who haven't sort of navigated through it. Basically, the Undead Apocalypse is just the game that we're, it's actually me and a couple other guys, and we've also hired artists and game designers to help out as well, because I, you know, Playing Gods was basically a one-man operation. I did that essentially by myself with help from other people that I hired to do it, but with Undead Apocalypse, I actually managed to get other people who are invested in it and helping to do that. And so basically the way this works is that I have 30 days to raise $50,000, which will cover the cost to create and produce and ship out 1,500 games. But the way the Kickstarter works is that people who are interested in the game, supporters can pledge any amount between $1 and $10,000, and you get different rewards ranging from a version of the game that they can print and play on their own to a fully produced box board game. So basically, you're essentially just, at a certain level, I think $40 or $50, you're basically just agreeing to buy the game ahead before it's out, and you're investing in actually making it. And we also have a section of my books and custom artwork and lots of cool stuff like that. But the really cool thing about crowdfunding is that if I can't raise enough money to make the game, then anybody who pledges doesn't pay at all. So there's no credit cards or charge. So basically it's either there's really no risk. I mean, either the game funds and it's a go and the game's being made, or if we don't reach that level, then nobody's charged. Everybody goes home. I've spent a hell of a lot of time and money on it. But people can go to Kickstarter.com and type in Undead Apocalypse in the search area to find my project, or they can link to, I'll be posting updates on my Facebook page and elsewhere. The name of the site is UndeadBoardGame.com. So there's lots of different ways, and, I'm hoping people will check it out and hopefully be interested in it. Even if board games aren't your thing, or even if zombies and monsters aren't your thing, and frankly, if you're listening to Monster Talk, then I don't know why you're listening. if monsters and zombies aren't your thing, but even if it's not, all I would say is maybe you have friends who are interested in that, and even if that's not really your bag. The real thing is the trick is just getting it out there and just telling people about it, because there are people who say, hey, I'd never heard about that. And yeah, here's $30 or here's $50 or whatever. And that's all it takes.
Now, I noticed that you partnered with a couple of guys called the Trouble Brothers.
Yes, I did.
So what's their role in all this?
They've been nothing but trouble for me. I'm joking. No, it's actually a couple game designers in Seattle, Steve Shippard and Jeff McCord, and they have been working with them on a couple angles. One is the game design aspect. I created Playing Gods more or less by myself. I did have input from other people and playtesters, whatever else. But Undead Apocalypse, I'm thinking, is probably going to have an even more improved game mechanic. These guys are both professional game designers. They've games to market. They've done Sword of Fargol. They've done a couple others, and so these are two guys that I've been sort of going back and forth with. So I've basically been revising and rewriting the rules dozens of times over the past 6 months, and I'll write them, hey, this is a cool idea, I'll send it to them, and I'll get back a document with a bunch of red on it. And so they'll say, well, we like this, we don't like this, and then so I'll try it again, and I'll get excited about, oh, well, what if we had this, and then they say, oh yeah, we like that, we don't like that. And it's been a lot of two steps forward, one step back, but by now, again, we've been working on it for several months now, and we have a pretty solid game mechanic, and I'm pretty excited about it. We're still tweaking it. It's not totally final, and in fact, what we're hoping is that people, because they can print and play the game, before the Kickstarter campaign ends, they can actually give us ideas and suggestions. So again, the game is not 100% locked down. You know, we're pretty sure about 95% of it. There's a couple little tweaks here and there. And so if people are interested and they're game players, you know, pledge a couple bucks, get, you know, download a copy of the game. And if you have suggestions, let us know. We might even do something with it.
I've added Jeff Zorno. Jeff, are you on?
Yes, I am. Can you guys hear me okay?
I can.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Jeff's a longtime listener of Monster Talk and a kick butt artist.
Well, thank you, Blake and Ben. It's an honor to actually appear on Monster Talk after listening to it for so many years. Yeah, always been a huge fan of the show. So, you know, I find it immensely fascinating to listen to.
So Jeff's actually, your art tends towards the macabre. I've got down here in my basement, I've got the some of your work from the zombie film, ZOMBI. The shark versus zombie, really great artwork. And then, so how did you get involved with this project with Ben?
I'm trying to remember now. Actually, Ben just reached out to me through email and was told me he was working on some game project that dealt with vampires and werewolves and zombies, and was, you know, wanted to know if I was interested in doing character designs that would be turned into figurines, which I had never actually done anything like that before. Like, had my, you know, illustrations turned into some sort of 3D representation. So. You know, I was all for it.
I don't know how the sculptor did it, but his 3D work looks really very much like a 3D picture made out of your 2D pictures.
Yeah, I was incredibly impressed, especially with the scale. They're, you know, because they're like you know, about the size of like a Warcraft lead figure or something like that, or Warcraft Warhammer. But yeah, they were very cool.
So yeah, that's why basically we had some art done, and we basically had the zombie locked down, but then the part of that fell through, and I'm trying, you know, we're trying to find someone. I'm like, what about Zorno? Like, he does some awesome stuff, and you know, actually Blake and I had talked about you before, and I was like, well, I'm sure he's busy. He's probably, you know, he's probably doing all sorts of stuff, and like, well, I figured it couldn't hurt to ask, and I was just delighted that he's, you know, he was a real trooper. He jumped right on it, and basically what I had him do was to sketch the front and the back of the same figure in the same pose, and then send it off to our sculptor in Georgia, the Republic of Georgia, not the state of Georgia. And he did these really detailed stuff, and it was, but it was really cool to, because I gave Jeff some art direction on the kind of zombies and the kind of werewolves and vampires and stuff, but then he really brought his own spin to it, which I liked.
So Jeff, when you were making these, what was your inspiration for the different characters?
First part, I guess, of inspiration is just taking the art direction that Ben gave me. And yeah, just trying to have fun with it. You know, like he said, putting my own spin into it. I just had to design a vampire, a werewolf character, and a human, you know, sort of like a post-apocalyptic character. The vampire was pretty darn easy. I remember him saying something like, we kind of want him to look a little bit like Nosferatu-ish, but, you know, different and whatever, spindly. And so... been doing horror stuff for a long time, so
yeah.
Just kind of threw a vampire together that I thought looked really cool.
No, he looks good. He looks like kind of a combination between Nosferatu with the Max Schreck version, or maybe Barlow from the Stephen King's Salem's Lot a little bit.
Yeah, and threw some like kind of like a bat-like nose on him, sort of like a splitting piggy thing, and you know, some pointy ears, some crazy big, you know, hands with really long spider-like fingers and stuff.
Yeah, that was awesome. I was like so happy when I saw that. I'm like, oh man, this is so cool. I mean, the messed up face and I really liked what you did with the jaws and the nose and stuff. And we're gonna have some pictures, some of Jeff's art on the website, and also the sculpts. You can see exactly what they did with it, and it was, I mean, both Jeff and the sculptor Lasha did amazing work on it. And then of course the werewolf. You know, talk about the werewolf.
The werewolf is probably the most fun one to do. I've always been, you know, huge into werewolves since I was a kid, and have done a couple of my own werewolf comics in the past and stuff, but. Took Ben's art directions, which you know, weren't a whole lot. He just didn't want like the werewolf to look too diesel strong, but not like, you know, some ripped Incredible Hulk werewolf.
No, it's nice. Yeah.
And I just tried to draw like some really brutal pose of werewolf, like maybe he was in the middle of a fight pose where he might. I have him hunched way over with his arms splayed out behind him, as if he had just sort of done like an X formation, like slashing maneuver with his claws, and then immediately leaned in for like a huge like gut area bite with his jaws. So it was sort of like a 1-2-3 like combo thing.
Yeah. It looks like his teeth are a fearsome weapon. I mean, it really, he looks like he's a wolf man for our radio style listening here.
We're sitting there describing art that we've all seen.
He's a humanoid, but he's definitely got wolf features with a long snout, big, big teeth. Looks really.
And actually, Jeff actually included a really cool detail that I had never even thought of, which is. I don't know if it came through in the sculpt, because again the sculpt is small, but the his art had sort of a human ear inside this wolf ear, which was just so cool. Like, that is awesome. I love that.
I almost forgot about that. Yeah, that just drew the inside of the wolf's ear to look like the inside of a human ear, which did look really kind of creepy and cool.
What do the players play? Like, how do you actually play, and how many people does it support, and what are the actual mechanics of the game like?
What's going on?
Yeah. What's happening?
What's going on? Yeah, and actually, it's kind of cool because when we were doing, I wanted Jeff to know some about it. Obviously, he's never played the game. Most people, almost nobody has, except for our test players. And so, it was important to me that he understand the background. It was almost like directing an act in a film. I wanted him to understand where his character fit in the context of all this. So it sort of had a context. It wasn't just, of a werewolf stuck in the middle of nowhere. And basically the scene is it's 2060. It's after World War III. And basically, it's post-apocalyptic, nuclear devastation, all these sorts of things, bad situation. And but for whatever reason, either radiation or toxins or supernatural wrath or whatever, these ancient evils arise. These formerly human figures, the zombie, werewolf, and vampire, and they all emerge from this wasteland, and they're preying on what's left of humanity. So you have these bands of humans, sort of Mad Max type was the icon that jumped into my head. And they're all these four groups are battling it out, and the figures that Jeff drew and we had sculpted represent the leaders of these four clans. So you actually have these 52 millimeter tall sculpted miniatures. And so these represent the leaders of each clan, and basically they're battling it out, and the title is Undead Apocalypse, and as somebody pointed out to me, technically werewolves aren't undead. I'm like, well, yeah, fair enough, although it depends on the folklore you look at, but yeah, all right, fair, and the humans aren't either, but it's, again, you got to have a little license here. But so you have all these different figures, and they're battling it out, and not only do they have each of them have their own characteristics. So, for example, the werewolves have especially strong attacks, and the vampires are especially good at turning, basically turning them into their own kind. You have movement benefits, defense benefits, things like that. And so each of them really plays very much their own character. And so I wanted to have them to have their own little attacks, that are unique to the characters, but also be able to use chainsaws, machine guns, So in Undead Apocalypse, you can have a vampire using a machine gun against you, and you can have a zombie, turning tables with a chainsaw on your head. So I like sort of playing with this sort of mashup. And then on top of that, I included the notion of grimoires. I've always been interested in magic books and monsters and lore and stuff. Going back to the golem, of Jewish lore, you have this special scroll that was inserted into the golem, or golem that brought it to life, basically. And so I was reading a really good book by Owen Davies called Grimoires last year that came out. Just really interesting, fascinating book. And that's what inspired me to have another element to this. Not only are these different clans, these different factions battling it out, but each of them has their own magic book. And there's basically two parts to the magic book, and you have to have gather your different reagents. And so you have each of the different characters has reagents that are specific to them. And so I drew a lot from monster folklore and from just general lore, because you know this is what I love. I mean, this is what I get off on, is really learning about these things. And so for example, you know, I have the vampires, their reagents are holy water and garlic, and for zombies it's zombie powder and salt, and the werewolves are silver and wolfsbane, things like that. And so I wanted to really bring in a lot of the genuine folklore into the game, because that was important to me. That, you know, I'm not going to pretend this is a learning experience, you know, like educational kids 6 to 12. But it's definitely meant to steep people in that lore and stuff. And so again, you have these four different characters. They all have these substances that are found in the world that they're vulnerable to, and they can collect these in order to assemble the two halves of their magic book, their grimoire. And that's part of the mechanics of the game. And when you can do that, you get especially powerful.
I was going to say, in the humans, it's hold on. I got it. Hold on. It's TiVo and McDonald's.
Oh, good one.
I was
going
to say something about like Burger King or
yeah. It's like just completely wiped them out with TiVo and McDonald's, right?
It's interesting you bring that up, because you know this was sort of the interesting wrinkle in terms of the game design that I and the other game designers came up with, was how do we deal with the humans? Because ultimately, I mean, they're in some ways they're the least interesting, because they're not zombies, they're not werewolves, they're not vampires, but they are what those things can become if bitten and things like that. And so these other creatures had their own inherent folklore and their inherent reagents. Humans didn't really have that. And so I had to try and think of something that might sort of substitute for it. And so I chose hemlock, because hemlock is a natural substance. It's sort of a classic poison, and so hemlock is one of them, and the other one is iodine, which is a little sketchier, I'll admit, although it actually ties in with the post-apocalyptic theme, because iodine is used to prevent radiation.
That's right.
Poisoning.
Yeah.
So it's sort of it's not a matter of playing with those and trying to see where you can go with it.
Very fun. So how long is playtime?
Well, the playtests we're doing so far are usually coming in between about 45 minutes and an hour and a half.
So for my friends, that's 3 hours.
pretty much. I mean, it's, again, we're still working. You know, we've got the mechanics pretty much nailed down. They're about 95% of the way there. We're still tweaking a little bit, and that's what we wanted to do. Because, again, it's a game in progress, and we're hoping that people will get interested in the game and playtest it and give us some suggestions. You know, we're not going to go back to square one. But if people have ideas and they play test, they say, hey, what about this? What about that? We're happy to do that. So that was an important part of the game.
Hey, Jeff, since you're on the line, you draw a lot of zombies and rotting corpses. What's your favorite type of zombie movie? Like, what's your favorite kind of zombie?
I absolutely do draw a lot of zombies, especially right now. I'm in the last issue of this war zombie apocalypse comic book I've been doing with some friends of mine at Image Comics, called 68 Jungle Jim. And the third issue should be out this Wednesday, and the fourth issue will be out a month later, and that'll be the last of this mini series. But yeah, it's one of the craziest zombie things I've done yet. It's basically the zombie apocalypse in 1968, but from the perspective of the Vietnam War. And so we just basically were taking the two most hardcore things we could think of, Vietnam and the zombie apocalypse, and mixed it together.
Wow.
Awesome.
Yeah, to answer what is my favorite type of like zombie, I mean, of course, everybody loves George Romero's zombie flicks. I mean, I'm particularly fond of Night of the Living Dead and Day of the Dead. Not so much Dawn, like everybody's favorite, but I love Day and I love Night just for their absolute... just the grimness of it.
They are brutal movies. They really are. Yeah.
But my favorite zombie movies of all time I have two that are constantly in battle for the number one spot, and it's either Lucio Fulci's Zombie, also known as Zombie 2, which where the famous zombie versus shark battle comes from, and Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things.
Oh, there you go.
Wow.
Dude, that movie is
I remember
so
that
awesome.
One, man.
Did they do a remake of that, or am I losing my mind?
I don't think so, but I think people have talked about doing a remake, but I don't think one has actually happened.
That's the problem. I used to read a lot of Fangoria, and you know anything that's even vaguely in production would show up in the news somewhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You see a lot of rumors. I have to keep following up. that's fantastic. Yeah, I always cite
Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things as one of my favorite zombie movies, simply because the scene where all the zombies finally are resurrecting from the graveyard is absolutely one of the coolest looking and coolest shot, zombie resurrection scenes I've ever seen in a zombie flick. And I loved all the makeup for the zombies in that movie. They just all look really, really, awesome and spooky. And you can't deny the awesome 70s garb of all the cast members in that movie either. It was like the same thing.
I was going to say, that's like 75 or 76, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, man, I absolutely love that movie. When I was a little kid living in Detroit, we used to have like a Thriller double feature, which is like, double feature monster flicks on Saturdays. The intros and commercial breaks for it would play the psychedelic part of Led Zeppelin's Whole Lot of Love with the wah! With like a lot of scenes just flashing at you from Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things. So there is that little part of it that's connected to my brain, which just makes me think of like fond childhood stuff. But yeah, that movie just rocks.
That's fun. I'm a big fan of the zombie movie from Fulci too. The I was watching it the other day. It came out on Blu-ray, and they were talking about the secret special effects trick they used to make the zombies, which was apparently just clay.
What? Yeah.
Top secret, cutting edge.
Yeah, no, but it looked really good.
It did. It looked fantastic. And people were like, well, how did you make it? What's the secret? And I think they were embarrassed or something, you know, but it was they slapped some gray clay on the people. And when it dried, it crumbled and it looked like rotting flesh and dirt. And it's an amazing movie. The worm-eyed zombie from the cover is kind of a horror icon, really.
Oh, absolutely.
Fun movie. Also kind of a downbeat.
Oh, absolutely.
There's not a lot of cheerful zombie movies. I mean, maybe Zombieland.
Dawn of the Dead has that superhero ending.
Well, it does.
Which is sort of why I always just like get so,
I don't mind that as much as I mind the weird slapstick carnival when the bikers come into the mall, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's actually a lot of like kind of just goofy aspects throughout that whole movie.
Yeah, it could be trimmed.
He played so much on society's fascination with, how cool would it be to actually take over a mall and just he got way too into that.
Yeah, when I was a kid, that was like one of my big fantasies. The other thing is you don't see today, and I remember this from the 70s, was that the malls had gun stores. You know, you never see gun stores in the mall now.
I don't remember that.
No, yeah,
I can't say I remember seeing gun stores in malls when I was a kid, but I definitely remember a gun section at like Kmart and stuff when I was little.
Yeah, so even the Sears had removed the guns by the time I was in late high school, early college. But they used to sell, like there was a Osherman, it doesn't really matter what the brand name, what the store name was, but there was a big, like my mall that I used to go to was called Cumberland Mall here in Georgia. And it used to have – it felt very much like the mall from Dawn of the Dead. So I really liked that. And I fantasized a lot about that. I'm okay now, but
– You have a lot of deep, deep, dark fantasies.
You also don't ever see in the malls anymore cigar stores.
True.
Or like Hickory Farms. Like sausage shops.
Yeah, they'll be like seasonal. We have a seasonal Hickory Farm store, but yeah, it just looks so happy and it's so funny because they're in the mall and have everything, and then outside the mall, it's all going to hell or gone to hell. I don't know, but I do like Day of the Dead, and I like Dawn of the Dead, and I like Night of the Living Dead. And but what annoys me is the popularity of the Eat Your Brains meme, because that only comes from the Return of the Living Dead movies, and those are seriously non-canonical. That's a Dan O'Bannon thing. That's not really part of what I think zombies should be like.
I think in the 80s when those movies, well, at least when the first one came out, it was just so darn popular, and it was just, I think everybody just caught on to just being able to moan brains.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
It was like a catchy kind of thing.
It's the video games now. It's caught on. I mean, even like the Joko song, R.E. Your Brains, which I'll probably stick on the end of this. It's got a Creative Commons license. But, I mean, I love that song. It's funny. And I love it in video games because it is creepy as hell if you're playing a game and you hear the zombies walking around saying brains. It's creepy. It's just, I think it's more true to the spirit of the zombie, the Romero-style zombie / ghoul, that they don't talk. They just keep coming, you know.
Well, I you know, that was one of the things that I really enjoyed about some of those were with the satire. It wasn't just, zombies coming at you. I mean, especially with the mall. I mean, there was this whole sort of subtext of, consumerism and satire and social commentary that I don't want to say it's lost these days, but it certainly was clever to be able to work into it.
Yeah. So I think we've actually done two zombie episodes of Monster Talk, and one on the ants and I guess what do you call it, fungal.
Yeah, I love that whole like zombie fungus thing.
Yeah, the zombie fungus is amazing. We're behavioral modification from parasites, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I'm just waiting for someone to turn that into the next zombie like TV show or movie now.
Yeah, it's after actually doing that show, I realized that my understanding of it was so wrong.
Same with me. But.
They're so slow.
Yeah.
And like in my mind, I imagine that like the zombie, like the ants would just suddenly go, I must now climb and clip onto this leaf, and then, fungus will sprout out of my head. And that's not really, it's actually, they keep trying, and eventually they clamp on, and then, but it's still astonishing.
Oh, yeah.
But for a movie, well, and I'll tell you something else that it reminds me of is, in H.P. Lovecraft, they have the fungi from Yuggoth. And and I thought it would be kind of cool to change them so that not only do they do their whole head in a brain, brain in a jar, but that they also could infect a human and take over their body. That'd be a great modification to those creatures.
What no one has brought up so far is the enormous contribution of the Kiwi zombies.
I hadn't.
But Peter Jackson, Bad Taste, Dead Alive. Oh, my God.
Oh, I thought you meant like the kind of Kiwi zombies that would go into a smoothie.
No. The Peter Jackson, Bad Taste. That's like hardcore, man. It's, Kai Horo taking over zombie.
Damage.
Yeah. Is it Bad Taste?
Bad Taste was the one he did with the alien.
Yeah, Bad Taste with the aliens. Brain Dead. That's right. That's the one where he had
Dead Alive.
Dead Alive / Brain Dead. Right. He had the monkey that was had a virus.
The monkey spittle.
Yeah. And that was a creepy film. It just goes to show you that you could have no budget and still make something very disturbing. So, I mean,
thought that movie was funny as hell.
it's very funny, but it's also, I mean, the zombie baby I thought was a bit over the top.
That crossed the line for you, did it, Blake?
No, I watched it. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying.
Several times. I think the one that grossed me out was there's a scene, I think it was in Dead Alive, where the zombie's getting shot in the head. He's near some rocks, and there's, brains go everywhere, and a crow comes down and nibbles on it. It was probably like eggs or something, but, man, that was nasty.
The amazing thing to me is since he's become a very successful director, he has lost the ability to edit his films down to a manageable length.
Dude, I disagree. I think Peter Jackson should be allowed to make 12-hour long movies if he needs to.
Well, he just did. I think that's what
I know. But I seriously cannot get bored watching extended versions of Lord of the Rings, or, you know.
Well, so
I cannot wait to see the extended version of The Hobbit.
When The Hobbit's finished, you will live.
I was like, that was so excellent, but it just wasn't long enough.
You're going to be able to sit down and read The Hobbit while somebody else sits down and watches the movies, and the reader will finish first.
It was actually kind of funny because I had not read The Hobbit in a good number of years. After I saw the movie, I was so stoked. I came home and started reading it again. I think I read it in about another, like, 2 days, like the first time I read it. It's a quick read.
It's a quick read. It is. And I'm anxious. I don't want to spoil anything for the listeners who haven't read it. It's a great book, but it's way different from Lord of the Rings. And Lord of the Rings is a much more satisfying read, I think. But I think he's going to I'm really curious about how he's going to handle the ending, because after rereading it, I felt a little bit robbed.
I have a pretty good feeling. I'm assuming I know how he's going to handle this whole thing. But yeah, I don't want to spoil
it. Yeah.
Zip it.
But I was going to say, I've always thought of The Hobbit as more of like a condensed, almost version of Lord of the Rings, but with the added extra super bonus points of having a giant, almost invincible dragon.
Yeah.
So. Like, that was something that Lord of the Rings seriously lacked, was a giant, nearly invincible dragon.
It did. I mean, the mounts of the Nazgul were pretty cool.
But man,
they're no dragons.
Their heads off like it was nothing.
Yeah. No man will kill me.
Fair enough, then.
Anyway. Okay, so we got a Kickstarter going, and the people will be able to get a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, the Kickstarter thing is going. Again, it's just a cool game. It's got, you know, like I said, vampires and werewolves and zombies all battling it out, and I tried to really bring in a lot of the folklore behind it. I mean, there's other zombie board games like Zombicide and stuff. I wanted to sort of do something different because it's more of a mashup, you know, different genres, different characters, sort of putting on this one place. And the board itself, it's sort of like Risk. The board itself is a map of Europe, and there's 10 regions in there, and they're basically battling it out to get these resources. There's different resources left over from the old world, and so there. Part of the original idea was, and I sort of got a little bit away from it, but it's still there. Was the idea behind. What did these zombies and werewolves and vampires have? Well, they had magic. I mean, that's part of their nature, but humans don't have that. And so I tried to sort of bring in, well, maybe the savior of mankind is science, and it's scientists that are really sort of saving the world and finding vaccines to turn these creatures back into human, things like that. So in the back of my head, I sort of liked playing with the whole science versus magic dichotomy. But of course, in this game, magic is real, and so I also wanted to have them have an access to magic, and so it's pretty cool. We also have different event cards, so each turn something different happens that affects all the players, and I don't know. I think it's pretty cool. Hopefully, people will check it out. Even if they don't want to, donate, just maybe tell a few people, maybe your friends would like to. So it's honestly, if the game goes somewhere, that's great. If it doesn't, that's fine too. I mean, I've failed at things before. I'll do it again. But it's kind of a fun thing, and I'm hoping it'll take off.
Me too. I hope it does. I hope it works out well for you. And this is not a real episode of Monster Talk. It's a special. It's a special. It's like, it reminds me at this moment of a, what are those, like those commercials where it's like, it seems like it's a show, but it's really a commercial. Jeff,
yes.
since I've got you here,
yeah.
What's your favorite monster?
Well, I've been anticipating this.
cheater.
Definitely my favorite movie monster is Godzilla, without a doubt. He's like my hero, but my favorite like actual monster, I bounce around a lot. Lately, I'd have to say it's a toss up between either Chupacabra or Bigfoot, because if either one of those were to be real, those would be pretty much the cooler ones, I think.
Those are both respectable choices.
Yes.
Yeah.
But lately, though, I posted this on my Facebook. Lately, I've really been interested in kind of obsessing on the Filipino sort of like witch vampire creature called the Aswang, which is sort of like this. It's like a mix of like an analogous mix of like a witch and a vampire, but it can also like separate its body in half, and like it has wings and fly, and it has like this really long tongue that pierces you like a mosquito needle or whatever. And yeah, they're crazy.
I would say
some of those Asian creatures,
Asian vampires and Asian undead to me are fantastically interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
Not, you know, it makes the European stuff seem kind of bland.
No, absolutely.
It totally does.
Some of the creatures just, they don't have a whole like slew of creatures that come out the Philippines, but the ones they do are insane.
Yeah. So we really need to do an episode on some more of the Asian undead, because they are.
We do.
Especially, we have some resources for that, but the, also we've got, Darren Naish is going to come back and talk about Godzilla with us as soon as he can get his schedule straightened out. All right. Well, thank you very much, guys.
Monster Talk.
Thanks for listening to this special edition of Monster Talk. You've been listening to Blake Smith, Ben Radford, and Jeff Zorno discussing Ben Radford's new Kickstarter project, Undead Apocalypse. Monster Talk is produced with the assistance of Skeptic Magazine. The views and opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of Skeptic Magazine or the Skeptic Society. Monster Talk will be back with real episodes, science-y episodes, very soon. Thank you for listening.
Did you know that you can now subscribe to Skeptic Magazine digitally? Just grab our free Skeptic Magazine app, currently compatible with iOS, Android, PC, Mac, Kindle Fire, Kindle Fire HD, and BlackBerry Playbook. Head over to skeptic.com/magazine/app to find out more, and download more of your favorite Skeptic content.